This panel discussion, I would like to give 5 minutes or less to the new panel members or the panel members that are joining the program that have not had an opportunity to speak already. And I would like for you to address, how does the choice impact consumer satisfaction, crossbreeding or straight breeding? And first, I would like to call on Norlin Tipton, who is the Q&A department manager, specialty meat company for Sysco.
Is this on?
No, I think you got to turn it on. Okay. Test 1, 2. Can we get our
panel mics live?
Test 1, 2.
Hello. This is working.
Okay, there we go. My name is Norlin Tipton. I do the food safety and quality assurance for Sysco's meat companies in the United States and Canada. Primarily what we do is upper-end products for steakhouses. If you think about dry-aged prime, USDA prime, certified Angus beef, the majority of our specialty meat companies are CAB houses. And so that's primarily where we fit into the marketplace. If you think about the idea of crossbreeding versus straight breeding for us, and it was said earlier, there's really three breeds for us that come into play. One, primarily Angus, obviously with certified Angus beef. The other is we deal a lot with Snake River Farms product, which is a Wagyu Angus crossbred product, and then Hereford comes into play as well. You think about what our consumers are looking for more and more today. They are looking for a higher quality, as was mentioned earlier. They are looking for actually a smaller portion size than they were looking for in the past. And they're also looking for programs that are, if you think about the where we are in the industry today, traceability and, you know, that kind of program whereby you can tell the people where the cattle are coming from is more and more important. And then beef is beef is becoming more and more of an issue. Additives are being questioned more and more. And so if I look at it and put it all into, you know, one pot, from the standpoint of crossbreeding versus straight breeding, for us, outside of those three breeds that I mentioned, and you might not want to hear that, but that's the reality of the situation, it becomes a niche. And if you can fit into a niche with another breed, it may have some, you know, merit out there, but the reality of the situation is the way the industry is today, that's not going to take the world over. So, in a nutshell, that's the situation from the perspective of Sysco.
Okay, our next panel member that is joining the discussion is Newley Hutchinson with Chain Ranch. He is the owner and operator. Newley.
Thank you for having me. We're a family-run business. We've been in operation since 1893. I'm not the owner. I'm a grandson, but I manage our cow herd and stocker feed yard operations. Pretty simple people, but we market all of our beef all natural, and we have a crossbred program. Within the crossbred program, we have nucleus purebred programs within that of four breeds. We pick our bulls from those four nucleus programs and go back on crossbred cows with them. Most of our calves grade 90% choice. The last 2 years, we've not fed them. We've sold them just due to not being able to make any money feeding them. That's kind of what we do in a nutshell. We operate in northwest Oklahoma and south central Kansas. We see a black-hided tendency. We sell red cattle, same genetics, and get beat up on them a little bit. Going into the feed yard, different programs will not take the same genetic type cattle that are red-hided. So we try to make our end product black-hided. Feed efficiency is something huge in the all-natural deal. We just got finished last year with a study with OSU. Took half of a set of calves, implanted them from weaning. The other half we didn't. It basically showed us what our premiums needed to be in order to feed those cattle all natural, and it's pretty staggering. It opened our eyes a bit, but it showed us where we need to be at on our premiums for staying all natural. That's kind of what we do in a nutshell.
Okay, Mike Kasten of Mike Kasten Beef Alliance. He is a commercial Angus producer. And tell us about crossbreeding or straight breeding. How does it impact the choice? How does the choice impact consumer satisfaction?
As I looked at the sensory panel slide set up there today, we obviously know that the high end is very desirable for our producers. As a lifetime commercial cattle producer and now program director of the Quality Beef by the Numbers program, we're looking at trying to fill that value on those cattle, fill that niche on cattle, or not a niche, that part of the cattle industry that has a high quality product. We've been doing carcass evaluations for 25 years, and we have been breeding straight bred cattle. And I think today in our operation, what's very important is when we have high accuracy, genomic enhanced EPDs, and with fixed time AI, the ability to put those highly proven bulls into our operation much more efficiently and easily than we ever have been before. I think we can do those things, and as Dr. Weber talked about, have both profit and premiums as a whole. Because as we look back at the data on, as I look back at the data on our cattle, our high-end, high-quality grading cattle have made a profit all the time through these hard times. Even we had cattle in this past year that, on the prime side, we're still making $350, $400 a head net profit. So I think we have the ability to do all those things in a system today and keep that consumer in mind and produce the high-end, high-quality product that they want to eat in a very efficient, profitable way.
Okay, our next panelist to join the discussion is Dr. Deborah Van Overbeck of Oklahoma State University. She is very intimately involved in the beef quality audit. Dr. Overbeck.
Thank you.
We're not live on this mic.
Mic 2. Steel mic 3. I'm going to focus my comments based on some of the data you saw earlier in a presentation on the National Beef Quality Audit from 2011. And if we take that just a little further, in that audit, we were able to do something a little different in the phase one interviews, and that was to ask end users, or those closest to our consumers, being retailers and restaurateurs, what's most important? Is it food safety? Is it eating satisfaction? How and where cattle were raised? What is it that's most important to your customers? And their answer was eating satisfaction. And the next question we asked him was, okay, now define that. What does that mean to your customers? And to them, it's flavor and then tenderness. Now, if you step back and go to feeders and packers, that answer changed and tenderness was more important than flavor. But nonetheless, it has to eat good. And so if you think about what Mike Woods said earlier, when Dr. Woods gave us that welcome, he said that him and his wife had steak last night and it was nutritious, it tasted good, and it was safe. And so if we meet those three categories and meet their consumer needs in those three areas, we've done ourselves well, and we can continue to sell that beef product to them. And so if we look at some of the data, and you look at, for example, the value lost for not meeting certain attributes in the audit, we lose roughly $25, we'll just round it off, $25 for every steer and heifer harvested because we don't meet quality grade consist of what we could use in the industry. And so we don't produce enough prime. We're pretty close on choice and select, but we really need to get rid of our low-end standards and no rules. We lose roughly $5.75 for not meeting yield grade consist, meaning we have some carcasses that are just too fat and don't have enough muscle in the end. And we lose about $6.75 for weight. And we don't lose much money for those being lightweight. We lose all that for being heavyweight. And so you also saw data this morning on how carcass weights continue to increase. Well, we have seen packers increase where they give us that heavyweight discount, but yet we still have end users, restaurateurs, and retailers complain about the size of cuts. And so those go hand in hand. So relative to the question that was presented, to me, it doesn't matter. As long as we end up with a product that our consumers are satisfied with, I don't really care how we get there.
Okay. Next, joining us is Chris Hitch of Hitch Feeders. Chris?
This one on? Okay. Well, just to echo what she said, in general, I think prime is prime is prime. CAB is asked for, it's well known, we all know that. They've done at least as good of a job or better than anybody else in the industry of marketing themselves. But I don't know that a prime CAB steak is really that much different than a prime Hereford steak or a prime steak from some other animal. The question was crossbreeding versus purebred customer satisfaction or consumer satisfaction. You know, maybe I'm pessimistic, but I don't think that the consumer knows the difference. They think that CAB is a brand, not a breed. I think all they know is if they want a choice steak, it better cost about this much and taste about this good and be about this tender. If they go to a Ruth's Chris and are expecting a prime steak, it better cost this much. They don't care whether it's black-hided, brown-hided, white-hided, anything else. From a feedlot standpoint, it's easier to move cattle that are Angus influenced. As a purebred breeder or a commercial cow-calf operator or somebody that uses a crossbreed program, all of those are fine at the feed yard level, depending upon any number of different factors. They've got to still perform in the feedlot. The packer still has to have, it has to have some value for the packer. But as far as getting down to the fork and the knife and sitting on a plate, that hide's gone. Doesn't matter. It's just got to meet a standard, the USDA standards. Those standards are there in place, and I think that's what we should be focused on.
Okay, now you've heard from each additional panel members. Now we'd like to open it up for questions from the audience. I would ask you to state your question clearly, and I'll try to restate it. And direct your inquiries to whomever you would prefer to address your question. Yes, right here.
My question is directed to Newley. Newley, you said you did this project on determining how many dollars worth of premium you needed to be in a natural program versus an implanted program. I've got two questions for you. So what was that dollar number? And then what natural program are you selling into, please?
Those cattle went to Creekstone. That study showed that we needed $200 a head premium above and beyond for giving up the efficiency in the non-implanted cattle. We've not implanted our cattle for 20 plus years. I mean, we always kind of had an idea of what we needed, but that give us put a dollar figure on it.
Anyone else? Yes, Tom.
You know, notice the irony of that question and answer about natural cattle. I mean, it relates to what we're talking about with crossbreeding and straight breeding. Is it worth it to give up the improved efficiency and lose $200 a head to take the implants and ionophores and so forth? And we have a natural program, too, so I can relate to what he's saying. And the answer is, it is worth it if you can get more than $200 a head in premium. So that's exactly the same point of, I think, this discussion, is we know that crossbreeding adds efficiency, but if you can add enough value in a straight breeding program and do what Mike Kasten is doing, you know, the answer may take you, you know, you may still be able to be on very equal economic footing. So it really, in many ways, is similar to the natural question.
Yes.
Yes, address this to the gentleman from Cisco. You mentioned on your niche programs certified Hereford beef. How do you market that compared to CAB, which is a choice type program?
That program is actually localized. Like I mentioned, the majority of our meat companies are certified Angus beef facilities. And we have one out on the west that was purchased that was a certified Hereford, and they were able to market that into their market, into that market that they were in or are in right now, up against another program that was there at the time. So they really didn't have a program going in, and they got that program and were able to go out to their customers and market it based on the merits of the certified Hereford program. So I'm not saying that we've got that nationwide. It's actually a localized. It is bigger than any of the smaller niche type programs that we deal with, but it doesn't even come close to the bigger program that we have, which is certified Angus beef.
Bob and Bob, you know, what does crossbreeding in any way affect the eligibility, the live animal eligibility for Angus products?
Is that for me, Bob?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. It's a great question, and Matt and I were just chatting a little bit about eligibility for a CAB program from a hide specification is black-hided, well, more than 50% black-hided, right? So certainly lots of the continental breeds that have open herd books have integrated Angus fractions into those populations, partially to meet live animal and carcass specs from a hide color standpoint, but also from a marbling standpoint. It's not only Angus breeders that have recognized the value of increased quality grade or marbling score in product, right? And there's plenty of continental bulls out there that do a reasonably good job of marbling. And why can't we have both heterosis and marbling? If I'm not mistaken, there's a pretty large seed stock producer in the audience that is going after that because he recognizes that if we retain ownership on those calves and want to capture value, particularly in calves marketed in summer months when choice select spreads wide, those cattle better ring a bell. Okay, and so we can go after marbling and a number of breeds. I think every major U.S. beef breed that reports a carcass set of carcass EPDs includes marbling has positive genetic trend for marbling EPD. So I think there's opportunities to capture both, and certainly making some products that are half continental or quarter continental can do a pretty good job of hitting some of those branded product specifications with planning. Okay, you may not be able to use the average bull from those populations to get it done from the continental side, but certainly if you pick bulls in the upper quarter, you're going to do a pretty nice job in a number of breeds to hit that spec. And I don't know, Matt, if you want to add anything to that.
I just want to jump in here real quickly. I just did some real quick math after I got done speaking, and as we talk about consumer satisfaction, what does that really mean to our business? I just sat down and did some quick calculations on you take the comprehensive cutout and loads and value. If you look 10 years ago, the notional value or the total value of branded and prime sales was equivalent to about $1 billion per year. And if you fast forward to where we are now, it's about $4 billion annually. So that's a $3 billion differential over time. Consumer satisfaction matters. And if you take that $3 billion and you divide it by about 30 million calves that get marketed every year, somewhere in there. You know, this is cowboy math. I'm doing it right here. That's $100 a head right there. That's a rising sea for everybody. That's a $20 per hundred weight additional bonus in the calf market that we would not have captured otherwise if it weren't for that. Just that's just prime and branded, but that's where we've come, and that's a virtuous loop, right? The more value that we get, then we want to pull more product, and then if we can meet that, because we don't want to have stockouts and programs, and Cisco makes volume commitments or whoever, then we can even extrapolate that even further down the road. It's huge.
Now, was that compared to that amount of money, is that compared to a base price you would have in a grid, or is that compared to select?
No, that's just a notional value.
Okay.
That's notional value of prime and branded sales on a weekly basis, do it on an annual basis, and the differential over time. That's all it is, yeah.
Okay, I have a question for Dr. Van Overbeck. You know, we've listened and we've had the beef quality audits year after year, and one of the things that keeps coming up or keeps being a factor are the no-rolls and the yield grade 4s and 5s. As producers, how do we eliminate that? We've done an excellent job of identifying the problem, but we've made maybe not as much progress in eliminating the problem. And then I would like to hear Dr. Brink also answer that.
So the question is really outliers. How do we get rid of the outliers on the ends that no one really wants? And it was interesting sitting through the strategy workshop this past audit when we had packers finally agree to the fact that if they want some yield grade 1s, they're going to have to accept some yield grade 5s and a few more selects and maybe even no rolls, even though they don't want them. They're going to have to accept those. They're also going to have to accept a few more heavyweights to get those yield grade 1s. They also realize that if you want a higher percent prime, that you're also going to have to accept a few more yield grade 4s, but they don't want any yield grade 5s. So it's give and take. It's what works best for your system to have the least amount of discounts when it comes to selling those cattle. So can you get rid of them completely? I'd love to say we can. I don't know that we're going to get there. Can we hopefully decrease the amount of no rolls and decrease the amount of 5s? That'd be best case scenario, and it simply comes down in my scenario, and I'm not a nutritionist, I'm not a feedlot manager, I'm a meat scientist. That's what I do. It comes down to management. And so how do we manage them to not make them overweight? How do we manage them to not make them overfat? So where can we hit that best quality grade and yield grade combination to make the best valuable product that we can for return to the feedlot?
You know, the problem with no rolls and really selects too is just that cattle don't have enough genetics for marbling, and that's where the problem is. I mean, there's not too many cattle in this industry that don't get enough days. They probably get plenty of days, if not too many. And I think the reason, you know, for the yield grade fours, and we do as an industry still struggle with that, especially getting to this time of year, good performance through the summer and early fall. That's interesting that's happened and continues to happen in a time when feed costs have been very high. So you ask yourself why. The answer is the industry wants marbling really bad. I mean, the consumer wants marbling really bad. Cisco wants marbling. And so that causes pretty much everybody from the cattle feeder up to push that direction. So that's the reason for it.
Tom Brink, I've got a question for you. I'm sitting down here in front. So we heard based on this one study, we heard that we needed $200 a head. We needed $200 a head in the natural program to compete against the implanted animal. So you're a feeder and a packer. What, on average, what are your numbers? What's your number?
It's right about the same.
About
it's
the
very
same.
Close. It's very close.
Yeah, and I'm not discounting the number. I just wanted more verification. Thank you.
Yes, back in the back. We'll get you a microphone. Hang on just a second.
I have a comment and a question. You know, the genetic correlation between birth weight and yearling weight, or birth weight and weaning weight, is fairly strong and positive. But in most breeds, such as especially Angus and Herefords, and actually most breeds, for the last couple decades, we've seen virtually no change in birth weight, and yet significant increases in genetic trends for weaning weight and yearling weight. And the point I want to make is that the genetic correlation between marbling and fat thickness is almost of exactly the same magnitude as that between birth weight and yearling weight was. If we don't put pressure for yield grade into the selection, if we don't select for that trait or select against fat thickness, but only select for marbling, we will see continued increases in yield grade fours and fives. And so my question is, why hasn't the industry put as much pressure against fat thickness and yield grade as it has been for marbling? Is are the grid values, why do we respond so much more to the marbling signal than we do to the fat the yield grade signal? And I'd like a couple of panelists to comment on that.
You know, Larry, the short answer, I'll start that, and somebody else can add to it. But the if you look at the majority of industry grids, they are built to reward marbling more than they are built to reward yield grades. That's been kind of an interesting thing for me. You watch it over the last 10 or 15 years. It's actually leaning more that way today than it was 10 or 15 years ago when we all got started selling cattle on grids. I would not have predicted that personally, but that's exactly what's happened. And it's probably because of this guy sitting right beside me and Cisco and the guys that are selling the high-end product. They just keep demand for, you know, the marbling just has continued to grow, like some of the charts that Neville showed as well. And that's what's driving the grids. I can't speak to the selection part of that, but that's the way the grids are built.
I started off this week and I went through two of the major packing plants. I was approving them for Cisco to pack products, and I went by the grading chain. And when I was in school 10, 15 years ago, it was not uncommon to go on the grading chain and see both a quality and a yield grade. I can't remember the last time I saw a yield grade on a carcass. It's just, for the most part, they're not yield grading carcasses anymore. They're just quality grading.
The other thing to think about when you pose that question is, from a consumer standpoint, you're talking taste fat versus waste fat. Consumer never sees that waste fat. And so to the consumer, the selection for marbling is more important because that's the only thing they're going to get that impacts their eating experience. They're going to trim the same amount of fat off the edge if they trim it off or if they eat it, whatever. But they're going to have the same amount of fat externally no matter what yield grade that carcass was, because they're all going to be trimmed the same based on the retail or the food service spec that they're given.